chapter 13 of 2 Samuel. Throughout this study thus far, David had experienced in the first 10 chapters or so of 2 Samuel much victory. He was triumphant in battle. He was going through the enemy territory, just taking numbers, you know, cleaning up, doing great, until that fateful time when all the other kings were going off to war and David stayed home, got disengaged, didn't stay in the battle, so to speak, but pulled back a bit. And when he did, he was tempted, and when he was tempted, he pursued after, and when he pursued after, sin was a result, ultimately death, because the wages of sin is death. You know how that story went. We don't need to recap it, really. David and Bathsheba, you see, and Uriah, her husband. David went from just some minor lust to adultery and murder very quickly, and then tried to cover it up and hide it for a year until the prophet Nathan came to him and exposed his sin. And David broke and was restored. And this is something that is important for us to understand. David was forgiven for his sin and restored back to the Lord. No doubt about it. In that story, Nathan said, God's not going to let you die. He's not going to kill you for this. But he said, this is going to be a problem for you. The sin that you've committed is going to be kind of a carryover in your life because there are consequences to it. And there in chapter 12, in verse 10, we're told that the sword, David, will never depart from thy house. In other words, there's going to be trouble. There's going to be heartache because the sword is not going to depart. There's going to be a perpetual problem now because of this. In other words, there was a great sin involved with David, wasn't there? Most of us would say, wow, man, adultery and murder? Whew, bad. Bad, David. How could you do that? And God knew David would do that when he anointed him king, didn't he? Just like he knew you and me would continue to sin even after he saved us. David's no different than we are. We understand that. And we understand that, hey, he is forgiven. He is restored. However, there's going to be a sword of consequence in his life, in his house. And this morning, I want to talk about what children learn from their parents, because this is the result of what David's life would be really engaged in from now on. What's that? Putting back together what he allowed to fall apart. And make no mistake, folks, many of us, if you are here today, you may very well know this truth, that you are possibly to this day putting back together lives that were shattered years ago. Things that you did, things that you allowed, things that you were a part of, like David. And you spend now your time, much of it, dealing with things that took place years ago. Not that, again, the forgiveness of sin isn't in place. It is, obviously. But there's still these consequences that keep playing on, and it's painful. And by the way, this is why God says, I don't want sin in your life. Because it's going to rip you apart. And God hates sin for that reason. He loves a sinner, but he hates sin for that reason. Because of what it does to us. And people will say oftentimes, well, you know, does God have to let the sentence stand like that? And we're going to talk about that. Why God lets the consequences be such as they are. And doesn't say, okay, I'll just remove the consequences as well. He won't do it. You can ask him. I I've done it many times. Come on, Lord, just remove the consequences. No, it's always the answer. And we think sometimes, boy, Lord, I thought you were forgiving. He is. I thought you were merciful. He is. Gracious. I thought you were going to take away the sin. He has. He's just not going to take the consequences away. And you can fight this if you like, but you'll be sore and tired and frustrated. And you're thinking, I don't like this study already. This is already a problem for me. Now, God promised that the sword wouldn't depart from the house. And the sentence that David pronounced on his own kind of self, really, has come to pass in this part of the story. Remember what Nathan said about the little lamb and the neighbor, and how the poor neighbor only had one little lamb and the rich man had all these sheep and flocks. And yet when a stranger came, remember, he took the neighbor's little lamb and killed it, right? And David got so mad and said, well, he's going to pay fourfold, right? David sentenced himself to paying fourfold, as we'll see in this story. This is a sordid, terrible, sick story that resulted from, listen, what the children of David learned from their dad. This is going to be a little tough this morning, I think. But make no mistake, and I need to read this because in light of what we're going to talk about, the question's going to come up, and I think it's important that we look at this. Galatians chapter 6. This is the New Testament rendition of what David's experiencing in his life. This is the principle that's pictured for us in David's story. And it's just a few verses, but I need to just read them to you. Galatians 6, beginning with verse 7. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Make no mistake, Paul says. God's not mocked. In other words, you don't fool God. You don't kid God. And if you go ahead and sow that seed of sin, it's going to reap corruption. It's going to reap havoc in your life. If you sow seeds of the Spirit, walking in the Spirit, you will sow, and what you sow, you reap. And what will you reap? Life, joy, peace. You see, the fruit of the Spirit, as Paul will say there in 5:20, the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace and long-suffering and gentleness and goodness and faith and meekness and temperance. There's all that if you sow to the Spirit. If you sow to the flesh, what do you get? Flesh. And what is the wages of sinful flesh? Death, you see. There's a death. David's going to experience that in a huge way. Also, I need to read one other verse to you. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Because this ties in, and then we're going to get into this story that's so difficult in so many ways. Verse 12. Because some people will try to live this out, and this is going to tie into where we're going to talk today. Verse 12 of 1 Corinthians 6. All things are lawful unto me, Paul says, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Paul says, look, don't be deceived. God's not mocked. You sow seeds of flesh, you're going to reap it. And you might say, well, yeah, but all things are okay for me. All things are lawful for me. Careful when you say that. You're still going to reap what you sow. And yes, lawfully, you're forgiven for every law you've broken. But don't be deceived by this particular reality. Some people say, yeah, but I'm at liberty. careful. There are still consequences to liberty if you're not aware of it yet. And this is where we're going to go. And so hang on, put your helmets on. Let's get into this story, because David's going to find out that the things that he has allowed in his life are paying consequences that he can't afford, as you and I will as well. You can't afford, folks, the consequences of what sin brings. It's very costly, it's way too expensive, it hurts way too much. It came to pass, verse 1, after this, after David had confessed his sin and went on to start kind of fighting victories again and battles again, that it came to pass that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar. Absalom and Tamar were full-blood brother and sister, having the same dad and the same mom, David being their father, Maacah being their mother. She was the daughter, Maacah was, of that king of Talmi that is, you know, was a pagan guy who was a ruler there in the Moabite territory, kind of near the Ammonites and the Moabites. And he was a king that David married his daughter to kind of appease the two, you know, countries, the two nations. Probably not a great move on David's part, but he had many wives, remember. Many wives and many concubines. And this is, of course, part of the deal, part of the problem. Now, what happens here is that Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Loved who? Tamar. That would be his half-sister. Same dad, different moms. And this is the problem, of course, with David having many wives, isn't it? And watch this. Watch what happens here. Amnon was so vexed because why? He loved his sister, and it vexed him or frustrated him or made him sick, right? It was a sick thing. He fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. Well, I guess so. In other words, he's wrestling, he's struggling with this issue. He has these lustful feelings for his half-sister. And in his thinking, he's saying, I can't do anything about that. I mean, I can't exercise this lust, right? Now, here's where this gets really tricky, and you have to stay with me. Watch what happens next. So here's Amnon, the oldest son of David, half-brother to this beautiful Tamar. And he's kind of gotten lusty, if you would. Where do you think that came from? David had many wives and concubines. I mean, that's a kind of a lusty lifestyle, isn't it? Mm-hmm. He gets it from his dad, of course. And it's gotten perverted now. It's not just a woman he's after. He's after his own sister. And then, watch this, he says, well, I find it hard to do anything about this. I can't do anything with this. But Amnon had a friend, not. He had a friend whose name was Jonadab. Now, check this out. Jonadab's name means liberality or liberty. That's what Jonadab means. He's got a friend who's liberal. Sorry for any of you liberals that might be here today, but check this out. This is just amazing to me. It's just funny to me. He's got a friend who's a liberal named Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. So he's a cousin. He's a cousin, you know, Jonadab's a cousin to Amnon. And Jonadab was a very subtle man, or crafty, tricky. He was really sly. And he says unto him, why art thou being the king's son so lean from day to day? In other words, how come you're losing weight? See, Amnon was so sick with this perverted lust for his sister that he wasn't eating. it was kind of consuming his life. And this friend of his, so-called, Jonadab, says, well, how come you're not eating? How come you're grown thin, you see? Wilt thou not tell me? Tell me what's going on. And Amnon said unto him, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. Notice that. It's Absalom's sister. Well, she's your sister too. He's trying to make it sound like, well, it's Absalom's sister. You know, like it's only my half-sister. Doesn't matter. She's your sister, buddy. You're not going to put this off. Huh. Now watch. Watch what Jonadab, or Mr. Liberal, says. Jonadab said unto him, well, lay thee down on thy bed and make thyself sick. And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat and dress the meat in my sight that I might eat it and eat it at her hand. So Jonadab says, hey, you know, if you want her that bad, pretend like you're sick, and then your dad will come and visit and tell him that you want your sister to come and bring some food and feed you, take care of you while you're sick. Now, I got to tell you this, guys. Anyone who makes it easy for you to sin is not your friend. This is a guy who's pretending to be Amnon's friend. Oh, you poor guy, you know, you're lovesick, you know. Well, here's what you do. Go ahead. What's the big deal? Anyone who causes or allows you to get away with sinning, makes it easy for you. Hey, run for the hills, man. That person is no friend. They're trying to drag you down, you see. So he gives them the plan, and so Amnon lay down and made himself sick, verse 6. And when the king was come to him, to see him, Amnon said unto the king, I pray thee, let Tamar, my sister, come and make a couple of cakes in my sight, that I might eat at her hand. And David sent home to Tamar, saying, go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down, and she took flour and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and did bake the cakes. And she took a pan and poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, have all the men from me, or send them out. And they went out, every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, bring the meat into the chamber, that I might eat of thy hand. And Tamar took the cakes which she had made, and brought them into the chamber to Amnon her brother. And when she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, come lie with me, my sister. And she answered him and said, nay, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. By the way, Leviticus 18, around chapter 9, the law was clear. You know, you don't uncover your sister's nakedness or have sexual relationships with your sister or anybody else in the family, as that text will go on to say. The law was clear. This wasn't confusing. This wasn't a gray area. You see, but this influence of liberty, listen, had twisted Amnon's thinking into thinking that, well, this is, you know, it's okay. Because his friend, you see, convinced him so. So she says, as he's grabbing her, this should never be done in Israel. It's against the law, you see. Do not this folly. And I, she says, whether shall I cause my shame to go? You're going to cause me such disgrace if you do this, you see. And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. You're going to look stupid and crazy and sick, like a fool. She's trying to, you see, reason with him. Now, therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee. She's just trying to get out of this. Go talk to our dad and see if he'll let you marry me. Yeah, that'll be an interesting conversation. Howbeit, verse 14, he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her. He raped her. Raped his sister. Now, Amnon, had two influences here. His liberal friend, so to speak, Jonadab, telling him that he ought to just go ahead with this because you ought to just do what you feel like doing. You know, it's not that big of a deal. You know, just go ahead. He had that going against him, but he also knew that his dad had committed adultery and seemingly got away with it. Right? Dad got away with this. He committed adultery with Bathsheba and got away with it. What's the big deal? It's just like that, really. It's just, you know, maybe a little sicker. It's the same thing. And watch this. And Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that he hated her with a hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. He didn't love her at all, did he? Love doesn't do this. Lust does this. Lust mixed with liberty equals perversion. I just got to say that. Let me say it again. Lust mixed with liberty equals perversion. It equals, I'll just flip on the internet for a minute, you know, and just kind of surf the net. Oops. Gee, I was going to type in, you know, horn, and I must have mistaken the P for an H. What happens all the time. Oh, well, I'm at liberty. It's not that big of a deal. Lust and liberty will equal perversion every single time. And this is what happened. Exactly what happened to this Amnon, who now hates his sister exceedingly because why? Because he just violated her. And he hated her to begin with. You see, he exercised lust towards this sister of his, and it was hatred that spawned that in the first place. And Amnon said unto her, "Arise, be gone. Get out." What a jerk, right? That's what you're thinking, right? What a jerk this guy is. Well, gals, you young gals, keep this in mind. Guys that want to just tell you, oh, I love you so much, and this is what they want to do, I'll guarantee you something. When it's all said and done and it's all over, you're going to hear the same type of thing. Get out. Be gone. It's happening every single day. Young girls hoping that Billy loves them because he's so handsome. And really, Billy's got one thing on his mind. You know, some of you dads that have young daughters, you know what I'm talking about. You know, you just look at Billy and go, dude, get out. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it is. Dads and young men with it doesn't work. Daughters, sorry. See you around, Billy. You know, whatever. I'm not picking on Billy's here. If your name's Billy, don't mistake that. But you know what I mean, Bobby, Jimmy, whoever you are. He has no care for her whatsoever, and this is how he shows it. He says, "Get out." And she says unto him, "There is no cause now." What do you mean, send me away? You're going to send me away now? Because in this day, see, she was a virgin. And now she's not a virgin anymore, which means nobody wants her. He's ruined her for his little jaunt with lust and liberty. He has now ruined a life. And, you know, if guys would understand this a little bit more, maybe they'd think twice before exercising lust in liberty. Now, she says, don't send me. I mean, there's no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou did unto me. I mean, if you send me away, then nobody's going to want me. and you obviously don't want me either. So this thing was terrible. But he would not hearken unto her. Then he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, put this woman out from me, and bolt the door after her. Now, what you need to understand is woman, when he says put now this woman, woman's not in the Hebrew text. What he's literally saying here is put this thing out of my sight. Now he's really a jerk, isn't he? You see. He's not even acknowledging that she's a woman now. She's a thing. Which is really, listen, which is more descriptive of how he treated her, isn't it? If she was really a person in his sight, a family member, a living, breathing soul, a person who's got feelings and all the rest, would he have done that, you see? He had convinced himself that she was just some object for him to exercise his lust upon. And this is why he says, get this thing out of here and shut the door. And she had a garment of divers colors, verse 18, upon her. For with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Then his servant brought her out and bolted the door after her. And Tamar put ashes on her head, which is a sign of grieving, and rent her garment of divers colors that was on her, and laid her hand on her head and went on crying. All these things picturing extreme grief in a person's life. Ashes on the head, you rip the garment in anguish, and when you put your hand on your head this way and hold it there, it's a sign that you're in mourning. She's mourning, you see, grieving. She's desolate. She's been left in desolation. And Absalom, her brother, said unto her, have Amnon thy brother been with thee? How did he know that? How would he know that? Well, I think it was just the way that Tamar was behaving. And, you know, in these palaces of the kings, servants have a tendency to talk a lot. So perhaps someone had mentioned Absalom. Well, Tamar went to visit Amnon because he was sick. And now she comes back and she's mourning, grieving, and vexed like this. He just kind of figures it out. Did he do something to you? And then, watch it. He says, but now hold thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing. In other words, don't say anything about it right now. Absalom's already got a plan. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. So she stayed there with Absalom, because she couldn't go back to where she was living before. Where was that? With the other virgins. There was a place in the palace that were set up that for the virgins that were in the palace keeping, if you would. They were servants and so forth, but they were virgins. They were all slept and stayed in a certain area of the palace. She can't stay there anymore. So she has to stay in Absalom's house. And watch. But when King David heard of all these things, he was very wroth. That is all that's said. He was mad. But nothing is said of him approaching Amnon, saying anything to Amnon, rebuking him, scolding him, you know, punishing him. Nothing. There's nothing said. He just says, and he's mad. But nothing's done. Why? Why doesn't David do anything? Well, I need to say this. It's important. One old commentator said, it's hard to wield a heavy sword with a maimed arm. David's own guilt of what he's done in his life has shut his mouth. And there's no discipline here for Amnon. And you know, this is something that's really key. The thing that David is not doing, disciplining when he should, is the result of his own guilt over his own life. And sometimes parents have this problem in raising children. And it can be sometimes motivated from, you know, oh, but I had it hard when I was a kid. I don't want my kids to have it hard. You know, and that we think that's a good motivation, you know. you know, when my mom grew up, she was in the Depression. You know, maybe many of your folks were too. But, you know, they didn't have anything to eat. I mean, everybody was hungry and there was no jobs and all the rest. And it was a tough time, very difficult, right? And when my mom, you know, grew up and married my dad, and you know, we lived in L.A., you know, and when I was young, coming from Japan, you know, I was just a little guy. But I remember this distinctly. When we finally, my dad started making a little more money and all the rest, you know, you know, my mom, growing up in the Depression, never wanted us to be without. So we had two refrigerators. Two. And both of them were full. Packed. And even when we all moved out, we all grew up, all the kids grew up, moved, she still had two refrigerators. Packed. And all the cupboards were packed. It was great to go home. You know, you go home in Safeways in the kitchen. You know what I mean? I mean, she just had everything in there. And I ate quite a bit of it, you know, which is probably why to this day, you know, I'm carrying myself a little on the heavy side because, you know, I mean, everything was there. But she didn't want us to go without because she didn't. But it wasn't necessarily, you know, the best thing. It was probably a little overboard in that direction. This can happen in other areas of discipline. People that are mistreated as children oftentimes don't want to discipline their kids at all because they were kind of on the other spectrum where it was so severe, maybe too severe. Maybe there was abuse. And so now there's no way I'm going to discipline my child. But the Bible says that you're supposed to. David here drops the ball. He should have done something. But he didn't, because his own guilt, his own sinful guilt in his life was keeping him from doing so. Can happen, can't it? But you know what? The old saying goes that parents often don't apply the board of education to the seat of knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Parents aren't getting out the paddle and swatting baby bottoms anymore. And people, I'm going to get letters on this because people are going to say, what are you teaching, beating kids? No, but the Bible is. Now, you say, wait a minute, I don't think that's true. Well, let me just read you a few places here. And don't mistake this now. Write God a letter. And again, this is kind of a controversial thing. Here's what Proverbs says in Proverbs 29, verse 15. You can jot these down. The rod and reproof give wisdom. The rod. What's the rod? Well, these little sticks they used to use to, you know, swat. You know, you get thrown in jail if you do that in public these days. You know, but God says the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother shame. If you leave a child alone and don't discipline, they will shame you later, guaranteed. And listen, correct thy son and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. You don't? Shame is coming, you see. Now watch. Another one. Chapter 23 of Proverbs. These are, again, what God declares in his word. Verse 13 of chapter 23 of Proverbs. Withhold not correction from the child. For if thou beatest him with the rod, and again, the word beat is discipline, not beating him to a pulp. But if you discipline him with the rod, he shall not die. Listen, thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. Kids oftentimes are going to hell because parents never discipline their kids. David, I suggest to you, started long before this incident with Amnon. As soon as that guilt hit him, he was like, well. And he hears about it. Oh, that makes me so mad. But he doesn't do anything. Why? Because he's, I did the same thing. That's no excuse. That's not a reason not to discipline. One more, and then I'll quit talking about this so you don't get too many letters. Chapter 13 of Proverbs, one more place. Chapter 13, verse 24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes, or many times. It's a consistency. Many times it has to happen. It doesn't happen once. And people say, I don't know what's wrong with Johnny. I just can't get him under control. Well, have you disciplined him? I did that once. But he doesn't listen now. Hello. Do it again. And again. And again. And again. And again. If you don't have consistent discipline, your children will run you ragged. And parents are being run by their kids because there's no discipline. This is not a popular theology or teaching today. Not even among Christians, mind you. Many Christians will say, oh, I didn't like that. I would never lay a hand on my son or my daughter. Well, then he'll bring you shame later on. Guaranteed. Have you met kids that have never been disciplined? Do you like being around them? No. Is it enjoyable? Watching them go, you know, and they go up and kick you in the shin, you know, and have no respect for authority, right? When I was a kid, and you just, I mean, and a parent or a grown-up walked in the room, it was like, right? You would never run up and kick them or bite them or yell at them, right? Because why? Well, I don't know about you, but my dad had the look. Right? You know what I'm talking about? Did your dad have the look? You know, you're kind of going a little too far in one direction, and all of a sudden it's like, right? And you knew, it's over. This conversation's over. I'm going to crawl back to my hole and stay there. Right? Because if you persisted, the look turned into a spanking. Heaven forbid my dad would spank me because it hurt. And you guys did this too. I know you did. You could always misbehave with mom. Right? And what would she say to get you to stop? Wait until what? Your father gets home. No! No, mom, you go ahead, spank me. Please, just go ahead and spank me. Just don't tell dad I did anything wrong, right? Because if dad walked in after a hard day at work and mom's in there whispering, you are sweating bullets, right? And people say, well, that's no way to grow up. Sure it is. Sure it is. Because that taught me something that I carried on through the rest of my life. And that is, people are to be respected. You don't mistreat people. You don't dishonor people. And without that discipline, people grow up. And they're not respectful, and they're not nice to be around, and all the rest. People that don't discipline their kids are doing them a huge disservice because people around them will not want to be around them. Please remember that. David could not act because his own sin. But Absalom spake unto his brother neither good nor evil. He never even talked to Amnon again. Absalom was so mad he couldn't say a word to his brother. Hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. He hated him, wouldn't even talk to him. Absalom tells David, no doubt. David hears about it. I'm sure Absalom had a conversation with his dad. Dad, Amnon, what are you going to do about it? And David didn't do a thing. So guess what? Absalom's going to do something about it. He's going to take it into his hands. Came to pass, verse 23, after 2 full years, that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons. Absalom came to the king and said, behold, now thy servant hath sheep shears. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant. In other words, Absalom invites King David and all the other sons, come to the festival and the sheep shearing feast and all the rest. And bring all the family, you see. And the king said unto Absalom, nay, my son, let us not all go down, lest we be chargeable unto thee. No, that's too big of a burden. That's a huge cost. We don't need to all go. And so he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but blessed him. So Absalom said, well, come on, Dad, you know, that's okay. I can afford it, you know. I'll foot the bill for the feast. And David said, no, but, you know, you guys have a good time. Then Absalom said, verse 26, if not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us. He's plotting. And the king said unto him, why should he go with thee? I wonder if David was a little suspicious. Why do you want Amnon to go? You haven't talked to Amnon in 2 years. Right? You think Dad doesn't know that Absalom and Amnon aren't on speaking terms? Dads know that stuff about their families. But Absalom pressed him that he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. So all the brothers and all the family goes. Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, mark ye now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him, fear not. Have not I commanded you, be courageous and be valiant? Absalom had told his servants, when Amnon, my brother, when he's drunk, we'll get him drunk, we'll give him a lot of wine, and when he's really kind of tipsy, kind of out of it in a sense, then when I command you to kill him, I want you to kill him. Now, where do you suppose Absalom got that idea? To get a guy drunk and then to have somebody else kill him. Didn't he do that with Uriah? Remember, he got Uriah drunk and said, go home now and lay with your wife so that the baby that I've conceived in her won't be chargeable to me, but to you. And Uriah said, nah, I'm not going home. Slept in the doorway. So what? So David then had to tell somebody else to kill him. He killed a man with somebody else's hands after getting him drunk. Absalom here gets his brother drunk and has somebody else's hands kill him. Same thing. He's following after dear old Dad. And David is going to have to face these issues that stem from... Are you starting to get the idea of how ugly sin is? And how many things in our lives, guys, are affecting our children? In what way are they affecting our children? How is it affecting? What I'm doing, what is that doing to my kids? Are my kids better Christians because they're my kids or not? Or because I take liberty in doing things, do they? And is it costing dearly, you see? These are questions that I just throw out there. You don't have to answer. Think them through. It's a tough question. Now, the servants of Absalom did so, and Amnon, as Absalom had commanded, then all the king's sons arose. They killed him. They took him out. They just like Absalom asked them to. Then all the king's sons arose, and every man got up on his mule and fled. I guess so. All the other sons of David got on their donkeys and got out of there. You know, adios, amigo. And it came to pass while they were in the way that tidings came to David saying Absalom had slain all the king's sons and there is not one of them left. The rumor mill, kind of exaggerated, you know, one son dies and you know, by the time it gets back to David, everybody's dead. It's kind of like church, isn't it? Someone knows something, and before you know it, the whole place, it's a whole different story. Do you ever used to play that game where you tell one person and then you pass it, whisper it around the room? By the time it got back, it's like not even the same message. That's what happened here. Everybody's dead. Then the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by with their clothes rent. And watch this, Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, "Let not my lord suppose that they have all slain all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead." Well, how does he know? I'm guessing that Absalom has confided in him. He already knows it's only Amnon that's dead. And how does he know that? Well, Absalom must have told him. For he says, by the appointment of Absalom, he's kind of confessing, he knows all about it, this hath been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. Absalom's been plotting this for 2 years, he says. Now this guy's a tricky guy. He's trying now to console David when he's the one that started the whole thing. And guys, that little liberty that we can take, and I'm not making a campaign here for legalism, but what I am saying is be careful that your liberty doesn't bring sinfulness into your life. Because this liberty that was exposed first, now you see he's trying to cover up and say, well, you know, Absalom, he's been trying to kill him for a couple of years now. Well, who started the mess? Jonadab. You see. But the real problem is that Jonadab was only a link. The problem started all the way back with David's sin. You see. So he tries to say, hey, it's okay. You know, just one son's dead, as if that's going to make a huge difference. Now, therefore, let not my lord the king take the thing to his heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon only is dead. Now, Absalom fled, verse 34, and the young man that kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hillside behind him. And now there's all these people from this big feast that Absalom put on. And Jonadab said, verse 35, unto the king, behold, the king's sons come. As thy servant said, so it is. See, I told you so, he says. And it came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of speaking, that behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also and all his servants wept very sore. They were just grieved over this thing that just happened. Absalom has now taken the oldest brother Amnon's life, killed him. And all these other brothers were witnesses to it. But Absalom fled and went to Talmi, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. Absalom went to his grandparents' house on his mom's side. Pagans. So Absalom fled and goes there, and the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. So David receives comfort, finally gets consoled over Amnon, and then desires to see Absalom again. People say, how could he do that? It's his son. He still loves his son, even though this has happened. Now, a couple of notes, and then we're done. But here's the thing. David was reigning in Israel. He was the reigning king, but death and sin were reigning in his own family's life. And this reminds me of something that's very, very pertinent, I think, to this story. Our King, Jesus, is reigning in heaven, but his family, much of it, are living in sin and death. We're part of the family of God. But just like these guys, this family of David, part of the king's family, and yet look how they're acting. And I'm going to tell you this again because it's so vital, I believe, to where we're at in our lives. Oftentimes, we're faced with this decision every single day. They, just like we, part of the king's family. He's reigning, but how are we living? And the result of how we're living has come from, I believe, this one area which has been used to deceive and to trick and to bring people down, and that is, it's okay. You got liberty. And Paul would say, God forbid that you would use your liberty to sin, because it turns things ugly real fast, you see. So, yes, he's reigning in heaven, and he's reigning ultimately in my life. But I'll tell you something. Just because Christ reigns doesn't mean that sin and death aren't going to reign in your life if you let it. And I'll tell you, liberty's the means, the avenue. Just saying it's all right. It's okay. Doesn't matter. And Paul says, if that causes another to stumble, or if I'm bound up by that in any way, shape, or form, I know that's a red flag. Get it out of here. So here's the question. In your liberty, if I come over to, listen, if I come over to your house, in your liberty, can you do what you're doing if I knock on the door and walk in and say, hey, how you doing? Fine. I'm just exercising some liberty. In other words, would that stumble me? Or anybody else that you know is a Christian? And again, people say, you're smacking of legalism again. I mean, I can't take these legalistic ones. Then I'm suggesting this to you. You've got something you're doing in your liberty you know is keeping you in bondage. Don't let your liberty be bondage, is what Paul says. Heaven forbid that you do that, you see. Now, David's paying a heavy price, isn't he, for that long ago sin? Isn't it kind of a heavy deal for him to pay this? Why isn't God going to just let him off the hook? Why doesn't he just relieve the consequences of the sin he committed years ago? Why not? This is what we originally started talking about today. And here's the thing. In this world, guys, if forgiveness meant no painful consequences, then the blessing that God might want to bless you with in that, taking the consequences away, would turn out to be a curse of more sinful behavior. Guaranteed. I'm thankful for the consequences of sin. Oh, I don't sit there and go, wee, this is so much fun. Experiencing the trauma of what my sin has brought to me. I don't like it in that sense, but I'm thankful for it. Why? Because whenever I experience the consequence of sin, I remember vividly what that feels like when I'm tempted to sin again. And it causes me to say, No. I know what that feels like. And if I hadn't had the consequence for that sin previously, then I would just feel like, hey, it's okay. Talk about liberty. Whoa, without consequences of sin, we'd all be really doing the liberty thing, wouldn't we? On and on we'd go, and our sin would become even more wicked and more harmful in our life. That's why the Lord lets it be, you see. David was forgiven, restored, but he had to still live out the consequences of his sin. And you and I do too. This is something that I think if we would just get a grip on today, just a little bit more, and say, you know what? I think that the Lord would have me be involved with this or not be involved with that to this degree that it won't affect somebody else in an adverse way, and it doesn't cause me to be stuck or bound up by it, and this thing will have no consequences in that respect where I will be paying for this. In other words, okay, I agree with Paul. You're at liberty to do certain things. But if you got to pay for it later, is it really liberty? And is it really worth it? See, there's some things you can do and you won't pay. In fact, they'll pay you those things. What do you mean? I mean, walking in the Spirit and saying, hey, I'm just living for the Lord. I'm just doing this because the Lord says so in His Word. I'm just going to obey it. That'll pay dividends. What kind? Fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace and meekness and goodness and gentleness and self-control and faith and all that. You have all those things as a benefit. They pay dividends, in other words. Otherwise, certain other things I might say, well, it's okay for me to do this, I think, and I'll just go ahead and do it because after all, I'm at liberty. That may pay a different type of dividend that might be painful. And the Lord wants you to be free. The Son has set you free. You are free indeed. And you're free to experience the blessings and the joy of the Lord. Otherwise, we tend to be like David. Forgiven, restored, all that is taken care of. But man, life can still stink. Even though forgiveness and restoration has been made, can't it? David found that out. You know, experience is the best teacher. It just doesn't have to be yours. Learn from David. Learn from the stories in the Bible. They're painful examples of what can be if we decide to do our own thing. You see, God's way is best. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word. And Lord, even in this tale of deception and Father, sickness and perversity and all the rest, we see once more the value of listening to you and your word. Following after you and living in the Spirit, walking in the ways that you've directed, that we may not, Lord, have to deal with certain things that are going to be awfully painful. I pray for parents in here. I pray for moms and dads, and especially those that are parenting little ones, that they would understand that the need for constructive, decisive, consistent discipline. For children that need to be directed. Father, your word is sure and it's true. And I just pray that you'd give parents wisdom, understanding. I pray for dads in here, Lord, today that maybe like to exercise certain liberties that are going to bring about perhaps some consequences, not only for them, but for their children. I pray that as fathers and moms, we would be directing and living our lives in such a way that our kids will be more like Christ as a result. May we have wisdom today, Lord. Thank you for this day. Thank you for the word. Thanks for teaching us again, Father, how important it is to hear your heart, to hear your word. We thank you for that. In Jesus' name, amen.